The Guardian. Why is the incidence of mental illness in the UK twice that in Germany?
Why are Americans three times more likely than the Dutch to develop gambling problems?
Why is child well-being so much worse in New Zealand than Japan?
In their new book, The Inner Level, epidemiologists Kate Pickett and Richard Wilkinson argue that the answer to these questions lies in wealth inequality.
What we show in The Inner Level is that more unequal societies with the bigger income differences make status and class more important.
And that elicits two responses.
One is you suffer from low self-esteem, you withdraw from social life because social contact is just too stressful. The other is you big yourself up. Instead of being modest about your achievements and abilities, you flaunt them, perhaps exaggerate them. And we see both those patterns more common in more unequal societies.
Could wealth inequality be to blame for the reported decline in mental health in the UK, the US and beyond?
Three quarters of adults in Britain are so stressed that they express not being able to cope and being overwhelmed by stress. About a third have had suicidal thoughts and 16% self-harming.
I'm Richard Lee. This is Science Weekly. For many years, scientists, economists, and psychologists have puzzled over why some countries that get richer don't seem to get happier.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome aboard. Once you have located your seat, we ask that you please step out of the aisle so the passengers behind you can pass.
If you can afford more holidays, a nice house, and a car, wouldn't that put a smile on your face? This is what Kate Pickett and Richard Wilkinson have been trying to unpick over the last decade. And they think it comes down not to how much money a country has, but how that wealth is distributed. What if it doesn't just matter what you earn, but what everybody else earns as well?
I'm Richard Wilkinson, Emeritus Professor of Social Epidemiology and Visiting Fellow at the University of York.
And I'm Kate Pickett. I'm Professor of Epidemiology at the University of York and the University's Champion for Research on Justice and Equality.
Excellent thing to have a champion for. Are we ready to chat?
Yes.
Terrific.
Yes.
Their research suggests that the countries with the greatest wealth inequality are also some of the unhappiest, with poor well-being and high levels of mental illness. And they argue that's because humans have a deep-seated psychological response to inequality and social hierarchy. We have a tendency to equate our earnings with our sense of self-worth. Our wealth positions us on the social ladder, and it's this positioning that can affect the way we treat each other. The truth is, we didn't always live in such unequal societies.
Yeah, so if we look historically and prehistorically, we spent the vast majority of our time as anatomically modern humans living in very egalitarian, reciprocal hunter-gatherer societies that were dependent on cooperation and sharing. It's only really with the historical period and the invention of agriculture that we saw
about 10,000 years ago, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, about 10,000 years ago, more hierarchical societies developed.
Yes, but what's going on now? Why is it on the rise now?
Well, if we look over the past about 100 years, we see that income inequality declined in quite a long, steady decline in most Western developed countries from about the 1920s, 1930s, continued at low levels through the 1970s, and then we saw a huge, steep increase with neoliberal ideology and economics under Thatcher and Reagan and in lots of other rich developed countries. since, what, the early 1990s, there hasn't been much change in income inequality in the UK over that time, little ups and little downs depending on what measure you look at. But what we're experiencing is the long-term impact of that steep rise never having been unpicked.
That steep rise in the 1980s, which has turned our society into a more antisocial society.
Well, let's take a look at the UK. How is wealth distributed here?
So I think the calculations, the most recent ones, suggest that the richest 1,000 people own as much as the poorest 40% of the population.
Staggering.
You know, getting on for half. And on income...
On income, we see differences between the top 10% and bottom 10%. They're about ninefold. And I think, you know, there is growing recognition within the UK that we are experiencing a real epidemic of mental ill health. We saw a report from the Mental Health Foundation very recently that found that 3/4 of adults in Britain are so stressed that they express not being able to cope and being overwhelmed by stress. About a third have had suicidal thoughts and 16% self-harming. Those are astonishing figures. And for some groups in the population, for young people, those figures are even higher. And I think there's increasing recognition that we are living in a society that is starting to be recognisably dysfunctional in terms of mental well-being. And people are starting to be interested in looking for causes. But I think that the key statistic, really, about inequality in the UK is how unequal we are compared to so many other countries in Western Europe, rich developed countries. You know, we are the most unequal of the rich developed countries in Europe.
The UK is among the most unequal countries, not just in Europe, but in the world, as is Mexico, Chile, and the US.
So the USA spends more on health per capita than any other country in the world and certainly doesn't achieve any well-being through that.
But it isn't just mental health that's affected by inequality.
You have to explain why the US, despite being one of the richest countries, has more people in prison than any other country. It has higher homicide rates, it has the highest obesity rates, it has high levels of mental illness, high levels of teenage pregnancy, all those problems with social gradients, worse in that more unequal society. And then you take more equal ones, some of the Scandinavian countries or Japan, and on all those outcomes they do better. And it's those differences between countries that allows us to actually see what inequality does.
For instance, around 25% of British people and Americans are diagnosed with mental illnesses in any given year. It's less than 10% in Japan, Germany, Sweden, and Italy, four countries with high levels of wealth equality. Countries with more inequality are more likely to have a whole host of social problems, from higher rates of mental health issues to violence and obesity. But why? How does one cause the other? Kate and Richard argue it's down to how we see ourselves and our success relative to our peers.
What we show in the inner level is that more unequal societies with the bigger income differences make status and class more important. And there seem to be two responses. One is you suffer from low self-esteem, you withdraw from social life because social contact is just too stressful. The other is you big yourself up. Instead of being modest about your achievements and abilities, you flaunt them, perhaps exaggerate them. And we see both those patterns more common in more unequal societies. The surprise is they aren't just more common amongst the poor, they're more common throughout the population. We all become more concerned with status, how we're seen and judged.
Status anxiety is a term made familiar by the cultural critic Alain de Botton. He defines it as the constant tension or fear of being perceived as unsuccessful in materialistic terms by society. And that affects everyone, because there's always someone higher up that ladder than you are.
The these issues are not to do with absolute levels of living. They're to do with where your level of living puts you in the social status hierarchy. Are you looked up to and respected, or looked down on and regarded as worthless?
And it's so ingrained in us. Think about it. When we meet someone, the first thing we ask is, what do you do for a living? And in doing this, we're gauging what their social status is, whether they're higher or lower than us on the social ladder. And the sad thing is, we quickly become uninterested in someone who doesn't have a sexy job title. This fear of being looked down on means we're trying to constantly climb up the social ladder. We flaunt our achievements on Facebook, upload our perfect lives on Instagram, and tweet about it too. The fear of being perceived unsuccessful is exhausting. And it's this status anxiety that Kate and Richard link to depression, addiction, schizophrenia, narcissism, and a whole host of other psychological effects.
Income inequality isn't only something that affects other people. You know, increases homicide rates, but I won't commit a murder. Increases teenage birth rates, but I'm not going to do that. But that actually, inequality affects their intimate world and their intimate relationships and their own mental health and well-being in very profound ways that they might not have thought about.
And that is absolutely at the centre of the modern, if you like, social malaise. And I sometimes say that for people really to understand the effects of inequality, they have to understand the common drivers for things like school shootings in the States and consumerism, where, for instance, school shootings are often people who've been teased, made to feel completely insignificant, and behind the shootings are a determination to show them that I can make a difference. I count, you can't ignore me. But also, if you look at consumerism, it's the same sort of thing. Money becomes more important. It's how I show to other people what I'm worth. And we see in one thing after another this same process to do with value judgments of each other. Our insecurities about self-worth a driving behaviour.
The violence surrounding status anxiety hit the streets in August 2011 when riots exploded across the UK. And it wasn't just directed at the authorities. People also wanted to get hold of fancy stuff.
While low incomes limit what poorer people can buy, they leave status aspirations undiminished or even heightened by the desire to escape the stigma of low social status. That is why it was particularly designer label clothes and high-status electronic goods that were stolen by young people who rioted almost simultaneously in many different places in England during the summer of 2011.
Completely destroyed. Words fail me.
They ran towards me, grabbed hold of me and said, where's the money, where's the safe, where's the key?
They protected themselves as police, they can do nothing.
So in a more equal society, a society where wealth is more evenly distributed, what happens?
If you look at the more equal societies, studies show that there is more participation in community life. People know each other, they take place in voluntary organisations and so on. There are papers also, research papers, which show that people are more helpful to each other, to the elderly or disabled in more equal societies. But as you get more inequality, there is a decline in all those outcomes and a rise in violence. And if you look at really much more unequal societies than Britain or the United States, if you look at places like South Africa or Mexico, you find there people are actually frightened of each other. So there's razor wire on top of fences around their gardens, bars on their windows and doors, And so you've gone from these societies with a good deal of reciprocity and cooperation and community life and awareness of sort of the general good to these societies where people are afraid of each other. So it just shows the appalling change in human relationships that goes with and as a result of inequality. And it's particularly awful because we also know from studies of happiness and studies of health that the quality of social relations, whether we have friends, whether we participate in community life, is absolutely fundamental to human health and well-being.
All the indicators seem to get better when wealth is shared more evenly. The one exception to this is suicide.
Suicide rates are an exception to the general pattern.
After the break, we'll be looking at why that is. I'll be back in a moment.
Make space this weekend. Space for films about Chilean romance, plays about millennial angst, and poetry that makes you want to write poetry. Those new jackfruit superfood samosas, or not. A writer that's never been written about. The manager you might love, and opinions you might not. It's your weekend. Make space to be inspired. Pick up The Guardian and The Observer this weekend.
Welcome back to Science Weekly. I'm Richard Lee. Before the break, we heard how countries with the greatest wealth inequality are also those with the greatest incidence of mental illness, obesity, and violence, among many other social problems. And this affects all of us, whether we're rich or poor. People seem to fare better in a society where wealth is more evenly distributed, countries like Japan and Sweden. However, despite being more equal, these countries also have a higher number of people choosing death by suicide. According to the World Health Organization, Sweden had 17.8 suicides per 100,000 people in 2015. In Japan, that number is even higher, at 21.7. For context, in the UK, that number is 11.7. But why? If wealth equality seemingly leads to lower levels of depression, anxiety, and other mental illnesses, why should suicide remain high? Richard Wilkinson and Kate Pickett again.
Suicide rates are an exception to the general pattern we see. We haven't looked recently, but certainly when we were doing our last book, there was a tendency for suicide rates to be higher in more equal societies, in a very different pattern to something like homicide. So we see much higher levels of homicides in more unequal societies. And we think it's to do with your tendency to blame yourself or blame society for your problems, whether or not you have an internal or an external locus of control, whether or not you feel ashamed for your shortcomings or you feel violent towards other people.
Yeah, so you could imagine if you're sacked from your job or you lose your partner, do you blame yourself? Or do you think it's the boss is treating people unfairly or blame the person your partner's run off with? So this issue of whether you blame others, whether the violence goes outwards or whether it goes inwards, is changed with inequality.
So the violence, as Richard puts it, goes inwards in an equal society. The suggestion being that people feel they can't blame others. If everyone has the same opportunities, then they feel they have no one to blame but themselves. Whereas in an unequal society, people feel they can blame others, and so the violence reaches outwards. Critics might ask, what's wrong with meritocracy? Isn't it enough to make sure that everybody gets an equal chance of success? According to Richard and Kate, not only is it something of a myth that the US and the UK are meritocratic, but the inequalities of outcome that meritocracy produces are bad for us all.
There are differences in ability between people at different levels in the social hierarchy, but those differences are more the product of that hierarchy than the source of it. The idea that the success of society depends on identifying natural talents early and hothousing those who possess them as if they were a rare natural resource is almost the opposite of the truth. Educational systems that separate out the more and less talented children as if differences between them were set in stone do so on the basis of a fundamental misunderstanding.
Is part of the problem perhaps one of framing? You seem to be portraying human talent as broadly distributed, so that what needs to be explained is the fact that so many are held back, whereas others see talent as a rare resource that is found only occasionally and so needs to be nurtured.
Yes, I think that's very true. The people who tend to view talent as very rare and must be nurtured are perhaps those who have been particularly privileged or lucky. And certainly we take the opposite view, and that talents and capabilities are much more broadly distributed, but the environment that you're in will either amplify your ability to develop those or will suppress it.
Yes, and now the brain scans that show the effects of learning new skills and so on, and we know so much more about the malleability of the human brain early in life. It's quite clear that instead of innate ability determining where you get in the social hierarchy and being the popular justification of social hierarchy, the main causality goes in the opposite direction, from position in the social hierarchy to the kind of abilities and skills that are developed in people.
But also when you have those strongly held myths about inequality, you know, that we live in a society where anybody can rise up and achieve things, that can get in the way of us making progress and can be a block towards people understanding the ways in which inequality damages society, because those myths can be used as a sort of an apology for continuing to tolerate high levels of inequality. You know, the clever move up and the stupid move down. We can't tackle inequality. You know, and all of these myths are shown to be wrong, but we do have an enormous job of education to show people that those commonly held ideas are not reflected in the science. At the heart of the issue is the way in which our societies, when they're very unequal, value particular contributions and capabilities much more than others. So we tend to be very respectful and rarefy computational, financial abilities, technocratic abilities, and reward those very highly. And we educate all of our children with a view to creating more of that kind of capability. And so we're failing to address the broader needs of our societies for different kinds of contributions and also recognise the value of those contributions. And so provide the appropriate educational context in which everybody can flourish and find what they're good at and find what they are capable of, and then create a society in which those different contributions are appropriately rewarded.
So how do you get that narrative, that very popular narrative, that it's because I'm worth it, how do you get that to shift?
Well, we used to think that all we had to do to change the world and change social policy and politics was do the kind of production of evidence that is our bread and butter as social epidemiologists. If we could show that inequality was a bad thing and show how it worked, then somebody else would do something about it. And of course, we have come to realize that this is not the case, and we have to think about becoming advocates for our work and campaigners as well. And I think we think it takes time, and that educating people is the first part of that. It's taken 10 years, I think, for there to be a very general acceptance of the idea that inequality is damaging. That's now very widespread and was not there 10 years ago.
Governments clearly have a role to play in reducing income inequality through tax laws and benefits. But with a problem that's so vast, so all-encompassing, will anything short of just smashing the system do?
Oh no, incremental change will help. So, I mean, we need action at international level if we're going to tackle tax evasion and fraud. We need national action if we're going to change the tax and benefit system. We need action locally. For instance, in our local authority, we have several of the major employers, including the city council, who will no longer contract with anybody who doesn't pay the living wage. Any small shift in our income distribution will have concomitant benefits in terms of health and well-being. If you make a business case for greater equality, I think it often looks so unbelievable because the savings are so huge. But it is time that people started to realize there is a strong economic case for greater equality, as well as a moral one, and a case in terms of human well-being.
The weight of evidence is compelling, and the story they tell about the effect that this has on our individual lives is convincing as well. But it's such a big issue. It has so many impacts on so many levels, and there are so many people with genuine power that this story doesn't suit, that changing anything is going to be really hard. It seems to me that if we are going to make a difference to these kind of inequalities, we don't have to just change the way we think, but the way we feel. And the stories that are going to help us make that shift, we don't yet know. Thank you to Kate Pickett and Richard Wilkinson for joining us this week. You can find a link to their new book, The Inner Level, on our website, guardian.com/podcasts. If you've got any questions, queries or feedback for us, please get in touch via email, scienceweekly@theguardian.com. I'm Richard Lee. This is Science Weekly.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.